Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Kicking off the 11 o'clock hour, our scout, Blake Bedingfield, he's in studio with us, a Titan scout for over 19 years, which went through the 2017 NFL draft. And he was the team's director of college scouting for the final 6 years. You can now read his work at paulkuharski.com, doing a great job there. Blake, great to have you back in.
How are you? Good to be here. I'm doing great.
How about that game? You've seen a lot of them in that stadium.
Another gritty win. And it was done differently this week than it had been the prior two. But, you know, this is a good football team they went up against, and they found a way to win, and they found it with a different mindset. They attacked downfield with Mariota and Corey Davis, and they were not going to let up.
What did you think about Marcus's deep arm in this game, given that we Vrabel actually said yesterday, I told you guys it was getting better. I guess nobody believed me, but clearly... whatever limitations he have now aren't limiting the deep stuff.
You know, his deep ball looked really good. Even on that first deep ball that went incomplete to Corey Davis, Corey kind of held up on that play. You saw him, it's kind of a deep post pattern out of the slot. And he looked back at the quarterback, didn't think it was going to be on target, it looked like, to him. And he kind of slowed up and then tried to gain his momentum again, and the ball tipped off his fingers. Would have been a perfect pass, probably a touchdown on that play if he would have just ran the route all out.
The other one I got destroyed on Twitter, I said it was late and short. It was still a good throw, still catchable. Was it Tajay or Taylor? I can't remember for the life of me.
Taylor, you're talking about
Taylor, yeah. the deep one that he had to slow up a little bit for, and then a lot of fans were looking for pass interference because he touched his face mask, I guess. Should that ball have been a little earlier, a little further out in front? It was still a very good throw.
Still a good throw. It was a good play by the DB to recover on that play. And, you know, Taywan's got to come up with that. When you're running downfield, it's tracking the ball downfield. How do you track it downfield? Not everyone has that balance and body control as they get the further they get downfield. I was told something by an offensive coordinator, Les Steckel, when I first entered the league. And he told me, he said, if you ever notice, he said, the best deep ball receivers are taller, longer guys, because the further they get down the field, the smaller they get, small guys. So he said the taller, longer guys are easier to complete balls to. That was kind of his theory. Kind of watched that over time, and there is some truth to that. Unless you have great separation from a DB, those 50-50 balls are going to be won by the bigger, taller, longer guys.
What do you think of Mariota's deep arm overall?
Mariota's always had good touch. He's been an accurate quarterback. I know that there's a lot of questions about his accuracy at times, but what has happened is he's changed systems so many times. This is something that really great quarterbacks in this league have not been subjected to. He has been subjected to that in 4 years in the league. So his accuracy is there, okay? There are always some fundamental technical things that he's got to work on. We talked about it last week with the deep outs to the right, just some fundamental things that he has to continue to work on with his feet and his hips. But his deep ball's always had a good deep ball. He throws it with accuracy. He throws a catchable ball. That's important.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Marcus and connecting with Corey Davis. That's the connection we've been wanting to see dating back to last year. Injuries and other things have kept that from happening on a consistent basis. But those two in particular finally got into a groove on Sunday, and I thought Davis showed that he was elite on that particular day.
I think he showed that he's becoming a much better player, elite. Yeah, at times he looked
in really that game. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. What I saw late in the game, there was a pass where Jonnu Smith ran a crosser across the right to the left of the offense, and he was wide open on a play. And I saw Marcus look away from a wide open player, shoot it to Corey Davis. Corey Davis was open as well, had a little bit more traffic around him, but he fitted into Corey. This was something that's a confidence builder for not only Corey, but Marcus with his receiver, that he is starting to look to him in big time situations, not just take the easy one that was there with Jonnu, who had disappointed in that game from a couple of drop balls, but went to a guy that was sure-handed on that day.
While we're mentioning Smith, is he improving in the blocking game at all?
No, not at all. I mean, there was a play where Brandon Graham blew him up on an inside run play that was actually blocked up well by the offensive line, and Jonnu was the right tight end, and Graham went inside of him and just blew up the play. And you see after the play that Jonnu kind of pushed Graham later, but he should have pushed him in the middle of the play.
What? I mean, how much you have to work around what seems like a relative zero from their number one tight end on a team that was very tight end centric when their true number one was healthy?
I think you have to keep putting him out there. They don't have the depth or the other players to throw in there on a, you know, on a regular basis. Luke Stocker's going to play a little bit more of that fullback role. He's going to play the second tight end, but there's just not someone else to take that role. I think you got to keep pressing him, keep putting him out there. If you were losing ball games and worried about that, then maybe you go find someone else. But right now, you have an opportunity to keep pushing it, keep throwing the ball to him, gain his confidence back. The run game is just not there. Hasn't been in preseason or the regular season yet. But that's got to continue to be worked on as well, which I know they are.
With the loss of Rishard Matthews, people will just see the win and the big day from Corey Davis and say, well, who needs Rishard Matthews? But you really have to look at the guys outside of Corey Davis. What did you see from that group that you can build on moving forward? And what do you think about the wide receiver position outside of Corey Davis now?
I think what they're doing with Taywan Taylor, leaving him on the outside, letting him win against the underneath coverage. He's running away, using him on the jet sweeps. Using his speed and quickness. This is one thing about Taywan is he's a confidence player. He plays with a lot of confidence, plays with a little bit of swagger to him. You get him involved in a game early, and you can kind of go to him later in the games. If he disappears early, he may disappear for the game. So, you know, he's one of those that you have to kind of feed the ball to him, get him in the offense. Obviously, he's not going to be the go-to guy on most games. You're going to try to go to Corey in the passing game so because he can do a little bit more with it. But he's been really effective right now. And Tajay is what he is. He is a possession receiver with good hands. Didn't show up a couple weeks ago when he had some drops, but normally he runs really crisp routes with good hands. He's just not going to stretch the field or run away from anybody once he catches it, but he did sneak in there for that touchdown.
Is Taywan Taylor a quote-unquote burner? Would you put him in that category?
No, I think he's quicker than fast. I don't think he's just a flat-out burner.
Is he the down-the-field threat that the Titans need?
Well, you know, one of the things is when you saw Corey go down the field, you saw him track that ball. Even on that one play where he held up, that wasn't a lack of tracking the ball. He did track it on some of the deeper throws. Taywan didn't on that one ball that was broken up where he should have been able to make a better, have a better chance to make that catch. So that's still something that's coming with him. I think he's better right now on the short intermediate stuff and using on those jet sweeps and reverses. I think that's where he's more effective. He can get deep because he is sneaky fast.
How did they attack Corey Graham, the backup safety, in this game, play next to Malcolm Mitchell? And I mean, it was clearly a matchup that favored the Titans in this game.
Yeah, I think so. I thought that was a big hole on the Eagles defense when Rodney McLeod went out with the injury. And he's a really active player in both run and pass, McLeod is. And when you put Corey's always been a sub package guy. He's been a nickel. He's been a dime guy. He's really never been a go-to player. And they put him in that position. He was playing a lot of single high safety in that game. And he was struggling identifying where the deep ball was going. You saw receivers running on, especially on some corner routes, where they were running free without anybody behind them until late, and that was Corey Graham showing up late. They love Malcolm Jenkins in the box. He's a really good tackler. Out of their DBs, they're a poor tackling group except for Malcolm Jenkins, and they like him closer to the line of scrimmage and being involved in that run game.
And I believe it was Graham who was supposed to cover Taylor on that fourth down in overtime.
No question.
It was nowhere to be seen. He admitted that he made the wrong decision on the assignment.
They ran a second line of defensive backs that kind of stretched from the first down marker up. And what they were hoping to do is want to throw underneath that coverage, make the tackle, get off the field, and your game's over. It's kind of a Schwartzy-type defense where you play soft and let something underneath. The thing was, Corey Graham, he didn't have anybody underneath. He didn't have a flat. He didn't have somebody crossing him. And he stayed still below the sticks. And Marcus threw the ball right over and got an easy completion on a fourth and long.
Let's go to the touchdown. You weren't fond of Schwartz sending extra against Mariota there in terms of defensive strategy. Talk us through why a blitz at the 10-yard line is flawed thinking in your eyes.
I think there's a number of things on that play where it's flawed thinking. You have defensive backs that struggle to cover the receivers all day long, and now you're asking them to cover man-to-man on the goal line, and you're asking that rookie corner who hasn't played a lot this year, that had to play in this game, and he's going to cover Corey Davis on that play. Now, you had a spy by a linebacker. He was spying Marcus Mariota. You had a defensive back that was taking Deion Lewis out of the backfield. Deion stayed in to block because of the blitz, but he didn't sink into the end zone on that play. So basically, you had the receivers in coverage with man-to-man. Everyone blitzed. That ball's got to come out quick on the goal line. Always does. What you want to happen is an underneath throw where you can tackle and get off the field and win the game. Titans were out of timeouts. That was it. Game over. Either Marcus has to throw the ball away quickly to preserve the opportunity to kick a field goal and tie, or if you make that tackle, game over.
And Schwartz's defenses are normally known for good red zone coverage, right?
Yes, but that was a questionable defensive call, yeah, especially with what they have on the defensive backfield. Didn't sink anyone underneath to take away those passes, and really it was just Corey Davis versus a rookie small corner that doesn't play very much.
Sunday, the Titans look to make it four in a row. Titans, Bills, the Lee Company countdown to kickoff starts Sunday morning at 10 on 104.5 The Zone.
Blitz coming. Mariota throws in the end zone. Man is there. Touchdown, Titans! Corey Davis, his first ever touchdown catch at Nissan Stadium. That's why you pick him. That's why you want him. And that's why Marcus Mariota is the man.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We're recapping Titans and Eagles. We'll get a preview of the Bills coming up, too. Blake Bedingfield is in studio with us.
Let's stick with Corey for a second off Mike's call there. What kind of coverage changes will the Titans now see on Corey Davis after a game? Is one game like that enough to make Buffalo craft a defensive game plan that focuses on him enough more in a way that it will have a bearing on Sharp or Taylor?
I don't think the Bills will jump right in and just try to take Corey away. I think you saw in this game that Marcus was looking for him, but there are enough weapons when Deion's in the game, in the passing game, and Taywan on some of the shorter routes, that there are other players you have to worry about. Now, no longer do you have to worry about the tight end. Delaney's not there, the middle of the field, that type of thing. But Corey has shown in this game that he not only can stretch the field a little bit with his speed and size, come down with the ball, but also he was tough on some of those out routes where it was a physical play with him in the corner. You know, that the Bills do not have the type of personnel right now just to match up one-on-one and take somebody away. Tre'Davious White's their best corner, and he is a good, solid player, but physically he's not going to match up one-on-one like that. He's a young player as well, but I don't see them just trying to bracket coverage or double coverage him and take him away, because Marcus has shown that he'll spread the ball around.
What did you think of the deployment of Deion Lewis in the passing game? 4 carries for 0 yards, but it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah, this was not going to be a game where Deion was really going to be a run-heavy player, but the linebackers for the Eagles are really poor coverage players, and if you don't have the tight end to work the seams, to work the inside, you're going to end up having to run a lot of crossers, which they can do, or install Deion Lewis in the game, which made a lot of bad tacklers look even worse. And he was breaking tackles, he was juking him and running away. He was using a really nice hard stiff arm to break some of those weak tackles. But you know, as he got more involved in the passing game, it really opened things up for Corey Davis as well. So you know, that is a nice little piece to have. Some teams have it as a slot receiver. The Titans just happen to have it as a running back.
The pass rush in this game sparked everything that happened in the second half. Let's just start with Harold Landry, because we have to start there. He has made an impact in every game he's played in, whether or not he's getting the sack or not. But in this particular game, the sack fumble changed the momentum completely.
No question. And it's the same rush that he always uses. He's on the left side. It was an outside speed rush to the outside with a bend around the corner. And he beat the right tackle pretty easily. Now, he actually, on that play, which I thought the game was, for the most part, officiated well, he actually came and hit the quarterback in the face, in the head. And that's what really caused the fumble, was the head hit. Wasn't a personal foul, which was a third down, which would have converted to a first down. But it was an excellent rush. The close that Harold Landry has is what is really impressive. He can really close to the corner once he gets that edge. But some of the things that he really did nice is he hustled in the run game as well. There was one where Carson Wentz rolled out, probably had 7 to 8 yards to get, and Harold Landry stopped him for a one-yard gain.
You mentioned he got to the quarterback with the rush he always uses. When you're scouting a player like him, is that particular rush easier to bet on at the next level than the power rush? Like, can you say confidently that he can get away with that for a longer period of time as a rookie before guys figure him out on the O-line?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's not the main guy that's going to start the game right now. It's still Rakpo Morgan. But teams are going to have to start paying more attention to that rush. He's starting to have more impactful plays later in games, which he's in, and they're moving Morgan inside at times. So, you know, the tackles are going to have to take away that outside rush and make him go to his secondary move, which he doesn't have right now. What you want to see out of an elite pass rusher, whether it's Von Miller or Khalil Mack, you want to see a pass rusher turn a speed rush into a power rush. And Harold just doesn't have that right now. You saw him on a couple of occasions work the inside, and he just got washed down pretty easily. So, you know, he doesn't have that inside rush. He doesn't have the outside in or the inside out. He's really got to go to that bend around the edge, but he's taking advantage of it when there's not a tight end or a running back on his side.
So are we likely not to see that develop until, like, the next offseason, something as he gets more coaching? Or is this something that you can see develop over a course of a season as the weeks progress here?
I think it's a feel and an instinct that he needs to have. Right now he can win without outside, so he feels comfortable with it. I'm sure they're telling him to mix it up, which you see him going inside. I doubt that's really him, because you don't want to just go to the fastball every time it's going to get hit. So, but he has got really two good mentors, and I'm sure he's watching Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo, who have that ability to power rush and turn their speed game, which Arakpo had early in his career, which he's now more of a power rusher and can work the inside. So those are two great examples that he can learn from to develop his game. And a lot of that's going to come also with Harold just getting a little bit stronger, in the offseason. So
you wrote that you weren't real impressed with advanced scouting. I mean, I figured against Jason Peters and Lane Johnson, who I think he was on more, that he'd have to get to the second move. He'd have to see the counter. Far better tackles than the guys he was going against in Jacksonville and against Houston. And lo and behold, he was doing the same thing without them forcing him to go somewhere else.
No question. The right tackle actually took a short step instead of a very strong, wide, deep outside lateral step to take away. He didn't take away that outside rush. He took a short step, Lane Johnson, and Harold beat him around the corner. Harold's got that bend is what makes him special. That bend around the edge where he can stay close to the ground and get lower than those 6'5" offensive tackles. And he used that to perfection. And I didn't see if he set it up on the play before, but really that's where advanced scouting comes in to say, what is he won on all his sacks or pressures or hurries? Well, he's won on that outside rush. I've got to take that away. Especially on a third down play where it's, I think it was 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 10, where it's going to be a little bit more of a deeper drop back, a 5-step or 7-step drop back.
Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Let's stay up front on the defensive line. And I'm going to go more in depth on Jarrell Casey next segment, but let's start with Daquan Jones. The impact Jones is having on the run game, can you put in perspective for us the guy who doesn't necessarily make the highlight reel type play and the impact he's having on the overall defensive front?
You know, Daquan, when he entered the league out of Penn State, he was a 4th-round pick. He was always good against the run. He was strong and stout. He could play a 2-gap system, which means you're playing either side of the block, the block, or he could take a gap as well. He could just be a gap player. So he's the type of guy that can really stuff a run. But the one thing about a defensive lineman that is excellent against the run is actually playing with their eyes in the backfield, not just playing the block, but actually seeing what's happening in the backfield and be able to shed a block the correct way. And Daquan had that from day one. So he could take on a block, play a 2-gap, shed the block into the hole or shed the block away from the hole where he could make the tackle. Sometimes he's shedding the block into the hole, throwing his blocker there to block up the hole. Now an inside backer comes in who's unblocked and can come in and make the play. So, you know, one of the things that Daquan has just a natural instinct when he entered the league was that to be able to play both sides of the block.
Up front, whenever they lost Woodyard, Evans got some more playing time in this game. What did you notice from him?
You know, I thought he was relatively just ineffective. He still doesn't look as quick as he did in college. Still looks a little slower. I thought, you know, they replaced him in the game with Will Compton in a lot of the passing situations. I don't think they felt comfortable with him in zone coverage, and that's something that he's got to get better at because he does have those athletic traits. Now, he played tough. I thought he came in and played hard at times. He was getting blocked and covered up, but he was being physical with the offensive line.
I saw that, too, with Kelsey. There's a play early in the game where he takes on a pulling center and just lit him up.
But a lot of that is he's not reading the play fast enough, and he's getting blocked up at the point of attack. So, you know, some of those things are he's got to correct. But again, he's really in his second, third preseason game right now, and he's learning it on the fly versus very good teams. So, you know, one of the things in the passing game, he looked a little bit lost. And Will Compton is not a good, overall a good coverage-type linebacker, even though he did make a nice play on the Ertz.
Well, and then going to be my next question. What do you think about Will Compton in pass coverage? What does that say about Rashawn Evans right now in pass coverage that they're opting to go with Will Compton?
You know, on that play, they put Will in the game, but then later they actually put Rashawn back in the game. So they're trying to give him more reps at it, and that's the only way he's going to get more comfortable with it. So there was a couple of times he looked like he got lost. He was peeking behind him to see where the receivers were instead of just having a feel for it. So, but I think in that situation, that was a crucial play. That was a third down play, and they were going to double Ertz anyway. They had a safety behind him, and Will just kind of jumped underneath and made the breakup.
Blake Bedingfield, I don't know how much of a Twitter participant he's going to be, but he is now on Twitter? Twitter.
Oh, nice job, Blake.
Blake.
It's about time.
It's BEDDINGFI1. Apparently, he just took what they gave him. So it's easier for you to just look at us retweeting him. The Midday account has it out. My account has it out. You guys, I'm sure, will put it out.
Follow him now while he's unverified, because it's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
Have you tweeted anything yet?
I have retweeted.
He's retweeted.
Paul's articles but that's
it. To all two of his followers that he had today.
I'm
he was
really
sure getting the word
yet.
Out.
He's going to be nice. Like Sports by Brooks, who just reemerged on Twitter after
randomly.
Like 7 years of silence.
Sent one,
and
one
everyone's
thing
going
and
crazy
it set
about
the
it.
World on fire. It was crazy. Brooks was awesome when that site was
built. We're all awaiting Blake's first tweet whenever that happens.
I think we'll assign MF to be Blake's Twitter counselor.
Yeah, set up an
social
alert.
Media counselor.
You can set up an alert.
He's
MF,
got kids in his house who clearly know how these things work. It's just a matter of how much he wants to do it, right?
I hope they don't know.
How old's your oldest?
She's 15, actually.
Oh, she knows plenty. I'm only the parent of an 8-year-old, but trust me, your oldest knows things.
So you and I both agree, I think, that Jarrell is off to quite possibly his best start first month of a season. And he's been good. He's been consistent throughout his career, but he's just been so impactful in different areas of what the Titans are doing up front. What have you noticed so far from him?
The first thing that they're doing on defense is they're moving him around. They're not sticking him in one spot and leaving him where he can get blocked by the same guy every time. They're putting him in situations, whether it's run or pass, versus the worst pass protector. So Stefon Wisniewski, their left guard, he ate him up all day long. And if he wanted to move over to Brandon Brooks, the right guard, he's a bigger, more stout player, but not really good in space. And Jarrell took advantage of that as well. Jarrell is really getting off the ball well, which means he's reading the snap. He's feeling good. He's always had great instincts. This is a player that doesn't look in a uniform like a great NFL player, but he has every trait that you want. Great hands, great instincts, great bend. He's always on his feet, great balance. Okay. But this guy is taking advantage of the outside rush that's happening. So Arakpo, Morgan, Landry, Correa, who's ever given it? They're getting a little bit of extra attention, which leaves Jarrell either one-on-one or when they're using that inside blitz from a linebacker, whether it's Sharif Finch or you had Jayon Brown. You had a couple. The center has to move away from helping out on Jarrell Casey, and now he's one-on-one again with Wisniewski or Brooks, and he's going to win a lot of one-on-one battles.
He talked before the season about being a strict three technique now. So he's moving around, but he's moving around to that precise spot as opposed to being lined up differently on people as he's been in the past. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So how much when he's just outside shoulder, inside shoulder of the guard, inside?
He is, if he's a three technique, he's outside shoulder.
Outside shoulder of the guard. So it's a hard place to double team him like you're talking about, especially if somebody else is effective. But how much just being in that one spot and attacking from that one angle, does that allow him to just kind of go?
That's him. Because he can get upfield in that three, in that B gap, C gap, He can also be an A-gap player. He's a guy that can bounce around. The thing with Jarrell that's so good is his he's lower, he's 6 foot, but he's just that balance that he has. When players get their hands on him, they really can't knock him off his spot. His low center of gravity is very good, but he's just got that, again, he's got an inside bend. Some of the really good three techniques, the Aaron Donalds, smaller players, have that, and that's exactly why they play that position. But it really helps out when you play against an offense that spreads out the field. You're not getting a lot of tight end help on the outside rusher, so Jarrell can pick his spots. Does he want to take that B gap? Does he want to take the A gap? And he's working the guard side to side.
Kenny Vaccaro dislocates an elbow, out for a couple of weeks. Where will he be missed the most on this defense?
You know, I think Kenny was showing that he was a really good blitzer. He was blitzing off the edge a few times. Whether he's making the play or not, he was forcing the play back inside. He's a really aggressive player in space. He may miss a tackle because he's overly aggressive. He may not cover somebody very well because he's going for the ball. But, you know, that's just him, and that's the way he plays. I think Kendrick Lewis is going to be the exact opposite. He's going to be more a sound in his techniques, but not near have near the speed or the athleticism that Kenny has. So it's going to be a little different. If they go to Cruikshank, who's the rookie, because Lewis has had the injuries, then you're looking at a wild card. You're looking at an athlete that can get fooled by different route combinations. He's got a really good safety next to him in Byer, but I would think that teams are going to take advantage of Cruikshank.
How do you attack him if you're Buffalo?
You know, in Buffalo's different. They don't really have a deep threat. They don't really have the offensive players to attack the safeties. Will they try? Probably, but they don't really have that group. You've got the Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes. You're not looking at a team that is just going to continually stretch the field, even though their quarterback has the arm to do that.
Let's talk about Josh Allen. Let's break down what you've seen from him. Where let's start with the negative. Where are they limited with him right now offensively? Because you mentioned they don't have speed at receiver. That's not on Allen, because Allen has the arm to get it down the field. So where are they limited with what they can do?
I think they're limited in personnel. So everything, Kelvin Benjamin's not a stretch-the-field type receiver. He's going to be a short intermediate chain mover. You've got Clay, the H-back, fullback, tight end. You even have Jason Kroom at time, a tight end that played at the University of Tennessee, yeah, that's catching some balls. You see a lot of out-of-the-backfield passes, whether it's McCoy or Ivory. Those are not threats anymore. McCoy is 30 years old. He's not the threat he once was in space. Ivory's more of a power back that has good hands, but you know they really don't have the personnel that they've seen in the first four games.
Is this a quarterback that's shown so far that you can really affect him with the looks that you show him as a defense?
Yeah, I think the looks are giving him a little bit of an issue. I think the speed that he's playing against. What is happening too? He doesn't have a very good offensive line, so he's probably got this will be the second worst offensive line the Titans have played against. I think Houston was the worst, and I think they'll be the worst all year. But Buffalo doesn't have a very good offensive line, so he's not really getting protected as well. Again, why you see a lot of the short passes to the running backs and the tight ends, just kind of the personnel they have. He also can't stay in the pocket long. He is a good athlete. He can run. He can escape. He's big enough to get away from an arm tackle at times. But right now, he's not only getting confused with a lot of the rushes that are presenting himself, but also the coverages downfield.
Why did Minnesota struggle against that offense?
You know, I think I don't know if it was as much against the offense. You know, on that first drive that Buffalo had, they were benefited by two huge penalties. There was an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, so 15 yards, and then a 10-yard penalty. So that's 25 yards that they were able to get on that drive. And for a team that really struggles to move the ball on offense, 25 extra yards for not really having to work for it is really beneficial. And then they turned right around and got a fumble recovery and turned it into 10-0. Then they got another fumble recovery, turned it into 17-0. And
yep,
what had happened in that is Josh Allen's been throwing 35 times a game. In that game, he threw 22. The big difference, less opportunities to make a mistake, less opportunities to throw incompletions or interceptions. He still got sacked a number of times in that game, which he has all year, but they were limiting his mistakes, which is what you want to do. They really didn't have an effective run game, but they were using the clock. They have lost time of possession all year long, except in that game. In that game, I think they had the ball 35 minutes, where the other team had it 25, and in every other game, it's been flipped, where they are having to pass the ball, which, for a rookie quarterback, he's creating a lot of mistakes.
Blake Pettyfield continues with us. And
watch how he thrives in a live environment.
That's right.
We're dropping him in. So Derrick Henry, again, you wrote about him wearing wearing them down some, but in the run game, it didn't seem particularly effective. And I'm wondering now, is his presence on the field a big signal flare that the Titans are running? Do they have to find a better way to mix it up?
No, they're trying to use him a little bit. The first play of the game, they used him on a screen. So, and he got 10, 11 yards on that play. They're going to have to mix that in at times along with the run game. But the one thing about Derek and the offensive line is that they can just continue to push the defensive line away. Derek's going to get his 3 and 4 yard carries. That's the kind of back he is. He does have the ability to take stretch the field and get outside and take it the distance. You've seen it. You saw it earlier this year. There was call back on the penalty, but he has that ability now. But what he's going to be is a pound the defense type runner. He's going to be a guy that's going to be in between the tackles. That's where he's at his best, and he's going to get those 3, 4, 5 yard carries.
It seems to me that the one question we get a lot, people presume, and look at a 6'3", 247-pound guy, and presume he's a short yardage back. Is he their best option on third and one most of the time? Because it seems like Deion Lewis maybe actually has a knack for squirming for that yard, sometimes better than Henry does. Henry can get it, but he also can get tripped up in the backfield sometimes on a clear run play where people are coming.
Just answering your question, I would feel better about Henry getting the ball on a third and one. Now, Deion Lewis has that unique ability for a small back to find that little crease and fit in. There's been some backs in history that's had that. There's also been some guys that have that lateral slide step that he has. We had a bigger back a few years ago, Lindell White. Lindell White had a great instinct to find that little crease and little hole to get that first down. Now, he was a little bit bigger back, carried a little bit more weight with him, but Deion runs heavier than what he is.
Can we talk a little college football?
Sure.
We can segue now. Penn State, Ohio State, Trace McSorley had a big night. What do you think about him as a player, and do you see him maybe fitting in the NFL at some point?
You know, he could be an NFL quarterback. I think he's a backup level type player. I don't really see him as a starting quarterback in the NFL, especially early. But you know, there are quarterbacks like him that eventually find their way on a field, especially the type of gamer he is. In that game, he was carrying the offense versus Ohio State, really with a NFL defensive line, NFL linebackers, NFL DBs. He was carrying that offense for them, and you know, they didn't put the ball in his hands late in the game, which they should have, but at least give them an opportunity to get that first down. But he's a guy that's going to be a backup in the NFL that just the way he plays the game, he's going to endear himself to a coaching staff and get on the field at some point. And that's what a backup quarterback is initially, and then they end up playing.
Is there a guy for Ohio State that just jumps off the screen to you when you watch him? There's so many guys who are going to get drafted on that roster, but is there someone that really shined?
You know, I think Draymond Jones, the defensive lineman, I think he's a – we talked about a three technique with Jarrell Casey. He can be a three technique. He can also be a – the Titans run a 3-4 defense, but he can be – he's kind of transitions all defenses. He can be a defensive tackle in a 4-3 or a 3-4, but he's got enough pass rush ability, but he's also very good versus the run. He's a really good athlete for the position.
We haven't seen him play, but can Nick Bosa – be better than Joey Bosa? We haven't seen him play recently.
We haven't seen Joey either.
He played earlier this season.
You know, Nick is a just a natural pass rusher with power. He's got that just almost identical build that Joey has, the same kind of get off and speed, but he's got that power in the lower frame of his body that really allows him to, what we were talking about with turning a speed to a power rush. He has the combination power rush. That's why he's going to be a top 5, top 10 pick.
Looking at the Tennessee-Georgia game, a guy I don't think we've talked about yet is Ty Chandler, and it's clear now that Tennessee needs to find ways to get him the ball more often. Do you see him as maybe, if not the only one of the two or three playmakers on that Tennessee offense right now?
You know, I think so for Tennessee. They need to get the ball in his hands more. He has an opportunity in space, especially when he gets to the second level of the defense to be able to run away from some of the linebackers, but also catch the ball out of the backfield, do some more things to make the quarterback a little bit more successful in more structured environments. So I think Ty Chandler, as he continues to grow, will be a nice running back for Tennessee. Now, they need to continue to add in recruiting and add some player to compete with him, but I think right now he's their best running back.
And you said before you really like the young defensive backs for Tennessee. What'd you think of how they played in a very tough environment on Saturday?
You know, I think it was a tough matchup versus a bunch of really good athletes and an outstanding quarterback in Georgia, but I like the way they're progressing. Now, we were talking in the break, you know, young corners coming out of high school rarely play zone coverage. They're used to playing man-to-man. That's what they do, and
They're usually able to compete with any of the receivers they're playing against in high school. But when they have to start learning zone coverages, being able to read routes and read combinations, that makes it a little bit more difficult. They lose their instincts while they're playing that. They lose a little bit of that speed. And you see a couple of those things show up.
Looking at Georgia, Jake Fromm had a good day, maybe not his best day. Is he a guy with really good pro potential when you watch him play?
No doubt about it. I think he's going to be, when he plays his last year at Georgia, which will be next year, I think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback. He's smart. He's athletic enough. He's very competitive. He's been a winner at all levels where he's played, whether it's high school or now in college. I think this is a guy that offensive coordinators are really going to like. He's got just enough arm strength, but he is a prototypical NFL quarterback. I think he's got the brain for it. Got it, like I said, the size and the athleticism, and I think he's only going to get better.
Chad, did you see what Paul just did?
I saw him.
He thinks we didn't notice, but he did that for PaulKoharski.com, not for the Midday 180.
Oh, come on, Paul.
Well, it's hard to I mean, we're perfectly happy to take pictures of all four of us. I thought here's an instance where the two of us are sitting beside
you. See
one
the fake smile he did during that answer and, by Blake, too?
And I had Mary Frances take pictures. I have no shame in that.
I just noticed Paul. People in the audience now can see that we're just so accustomed to Paul, like, doing crazy things during a broadcast. We don't even mess with our stride. Like, Paul is, like, gesturing for eight people to come over, and I'm like, whatever. It's Paul
texting
being Paul.
It's kind of, I'm like Manning. Behind the line. Paul, Chad, you should like that.
Mary Frances, please.
I'm pointing and I'm moving people around. A lot of it's
audible.
Fake gesticulating. It doesn't mean anything.
Audible.
It's just for show. Then some of it means a thing. She was being
Mary Frances,
a little bit
please
bashful.
Post that for Midday 180.
She was
also
being a little bit bashful about coming right up
it's a
to
great
the front.
Picture.
And I gestured. It's okay if you go in front of this young man for a moment.
Post for Midday 182, please. Thank you. Thank you.
Two handsome, unshaven
I just thought
men.
We had all these witnesses to see you smile during college football discussion.
I like Fromm. I'm excited to see him as
Fromm makes you smile?
Yeah. But not, I mean, I know I'm supposed to cry like
he
Pruitt.
He doesn't make you cry?
I know I'm supposed to cry like Pruitt did, based on him, but I like him.
Blake, next week, let's break down Kyle Shermer and Kalijah Lipscomb.
Sounds good.
From an NFL perspective, because they continue to connect weekly for highlight reel type passes and throws. So
we're kind of curious, compared to Cutler Matthews was the last great combination, right?
Yep. Cutler Bennett. It was,
yes,
Rogers Matthews.
Yeah, I'll put Rogers Matthews third.
Like you
on
like
the Rogers part.
You like the Titans this week, week five?
I do. I think this is going to be one of the games. I think Miami was one of those games, but Titans should have better players, better personnel than the team they're playing against. I think Jacksonville had a lot of good, really good defensive personnel, and obviously the Eagles being the Super Bowl champs with the quarterback coming back and kind of getting back into the flow. But, you know, I think they should be able to match up personnel-wise. This is going to be a game where you see the pass rush should be dominant again versus an average offensive line and a rookie quarterback. They really don't have the threats at the receiver position to put a lot of pressure on the defensive backs. Where they like to play tight coverage, where Malcolm likes to be competitive, there should be opportunities for interceptions with this quarterback, but also with the way the defensive backs play.
Read Blake's preview of this matchup coming up later this week at PaulKoharski.com.
You can also see that photo that I was just taking.
That's right. It'll be available.
Well, that's exclusive
to
PaulKoharski.com.
We'll have to see if it passes muster.
Those in the audience here saw it live, but you can exclusively see it at PaulKoharski.com.
Hey, if it's good, I'll get it printed out, and then next time you're here, Blake and I'll sign it.
Blake, thank you. Enjoy Edley's.
I will.
Grab some barbecue.
It smells great.